You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the Kid Counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, I am answering another listener question, and this one came from Maryland, from Batsheva. I'm hoping that I'm saying that correctly. I looked it up, so I think that's how to say it. But if I botched it, I'm so sorry. So this is actually about tone of voice in play therapy. And I love the idea of talking about this because this isn't something that is necessarily covered in, you know, some of the CPRT content. And it's not necessarily something that we talk about a lot when we're learning the model. But this is something that really has a big impact. And I think we need to be cognizant of the effect that this has. And especially in light of the research talking about how so much of our communication is nonverbal, we really do need to be aware of our tone of voice and what that looks like. So, Batsheva, thank you so much for writing this. And the question is, can you do a podcast about the tone of voice that we use in therapy? Many times our tone implies how we feel about something or can be leading, such as very excited and positive versus using a neutral or more flat tone. So yes, let's definitely dive in and let's talk through a couple of things that I think are relevant. So first, I want to kind of unpack the fact that we do absolutely change our tone to match the child's emotion. So in certain circumstances in the playroom, we want our tone of voice to be similar to the child's emotional expression. So we'll talk through that. Another thing I'd like to discuss is that when we are setting limits or giving choices, we want our tone of voice to be more neutral. So we'll make sense of that together. And then in a couple of other scenarios, our tone of voice can change. However, we need to be aware how it will be interpreted. So for example, when we are using encouragement as the fourth pillar, we would want our tone to be happier and excited. But if we use a more flat tone, then it will definitely be perceived as either apathetic or more angry. And so I want to kind of make sure that we're aware of the implications when we do that tone of voice shift. So let's first talk about matching emotion. So when we go back to early in the podcast episodes, when we were talking through the first pillar, which is reflecting feelings, one of our goals in the playroom is to match our tone of voice and our facial expression to be appropriate for what the child is expressing. So if it is a positive emotion, we would want our tone of voice to be lighter, and also we would want our facial expression to have a softer or happier expression on it. So let's say the child is really excited that they finally got the dart to shoot out of the dart gun. All right, so it would not make sense for us to go, "You're so proud," because all of a sudden now there's incongruence. But if the child's very excited, we would want to elevate the pitch of our voice and we would want our facial expression to be happier. So we would say, "You're so proud." So notice how when we're talking about tone of voice, if we're reflecting a feeling, we always, absolute on purpose, want to make sure that it maps to the category of feeling that the child expresses. Now, the caveat is sometimes kids get really, really emotional about things. So they're bouncing off the wall excited, or they're really, really mad and they're throwing things and they're trying to hurt you. So at that point, their excessive emotional expression does not warrant the same level from us. So our tone of voice is usually a toned down version of their level of emotion, but it still matches. So if a child is experiencing a negative emotion, then obviously our tone of voice is lower and flatter, and our face is more serious. So child is working really hard to build a tower. It falls 6 times in a row and they're just done with it and they're ticked off and they don't want to do it anymore. So we would lower our tone of voice and we would match the negative emotion and we would say, "You're really frustrated it fell." Because if we were to say, "You're so frustrated," that is flippant and kids get really, really angry when they see, when they feel like we don't understand what they're going through emotionally. So tone of voice and facial expression are extremely important when we are reflecting feelings with kids. So we kind of tone down their level of emotion if theirs are very high, but we definitely want it to make sense the way we say things and what they're expressing emotionally. All right, so if we understand that, that specifically if we're using the reflecting feeling skill, we do match our tone of voice to the child. Now, let's talk about if we have to set limits or provide choices. So the limit setting process and the choice giving process, those are the second and third play therapy pillars. Now, all of a sudden, our goal is to keep our tone of voice neutral. Because when we set limits or when we give choices, we state them as facts rather than with any kind of emotional charge. So, child is chucking Hot Wheels at your head, whether for fun or out of anger or because it became a game. I'm not really sure. You never really know what motivates a child to do crazy things in the playroom. But, you know, Hot Wheels are buzzing by your head at full speed. You quickly realize this is a violation of I have to be safe and the child has to be safe and the toys can't be broken. So I need to set a limit. Now, when we match facial expression and tone of voice with reflection of feeling, we do not when we set limits and provide choices. Because if we let our emotions or the child's emotions influence us setting limits and giving choices, they come out as either manipulative or prescriptive, or we have expectations, or, you know, you better choose this one, even though I'm giving you two, you better not pick this one. And all of a sudden, then it loses its efficacy because we're no longer neutral. So when we set limits, we state it as if we're stating the sky is blue, the grass is green, toys are not for throwing at people in the playroom. So our tone of voice really does need to be extremely neutral when we are setting limits and providing choices. So in that specific scenario, I might say, "Billy, you're really mad that we still have 20 minutes left of our playtime, but I'm not for throwing cars at. You can choose to throw them at the carpet, or you can choose to throw them into this bucket. Which do you choose?" Now notice that if I would have said, "I am not for throwing cars at, and if you choose," all of a sudden, it's a totally different interpretation because the child has learned a couple of things. One, I'm not in control of my emotions. Two, the child's behavior is actually influencing how I feel about things. And three, I no longer unconditionally love and accept the child just as they are in this moment. And probably four, I'm making it very clear what I want them to do by my tone of voice, which is stop throwing cars in my head. So the child learns nothing about self-control and self-responsibility when I am making it very clear what they need to do in that moment. So limits and choices are extremely neutral with our tone of voice. And then finally, if we are using encouragement, we want our tone of voice to be more positive. Because remember, esteem building and encouragement is to acknowledge the child's effort and contribution and what they're working on. So obviously, if we say, "You worked really hard," or "Wow, you did it," that does not have the same impact as, "You did it, you didn't give up." Because the encouragement is, "I see your capacity for the things that you're trying to do. I believe in you. I trust in your capabilities to handle these things." So obviously that would be more positive. Now on the flip side, if we say anything in the playroom flatly, so kind of apathetic or devoid of emotion, so we just state it in kind of a blah fashion, kids are very quick to interpret that to mean that we are upset with them in some way. So I've watched lots and lots, I mean, thousands of hours at this point of therapist videos and play sessions. And, you know, as we're watching, it's uncanny how often a child goes, "What?" if a therapist says something in a very flat tone of voice. So, "Oh, you wanted to play in the sand. What?" Because the implication is you're upset with something or you wouldn't have said it like that. So just be mindful that if you don't have any inflection in your voice, kids almost always assume that means you're somehow upset with them or angry or somehow dissatisfied with what's going on. So, Batsheva, thank you so much for this question. Thank you for emailing and reaching out. I really think tone of voice is a crucial piece, and we don't typically discuss it. So I'm really happy I had a chance to cover that. And by the way, I'm going to give maybe a 3 or 4 minute little addition here, and it's really important. So please don't think that I'm done. I really want you all to hear this. For each and every one of you that have joined this podcast at some point in the last year and a half, I started it about a year and a half ago. And I don't know if you're new or if you've been with me from the beginning. I know a lot of you tell me you like listen to every single episode and you're like my most faithful veteran listeners. But I know a lot of you continue to find me every day and there are new listeners all the time. So to all of you, no matter how long you've been with me, this really is an absolutely amazing community. I am so happy and grateful and proud that this podcast and you all have made this such a priority. Our field needs really, really grounded, skilled, knowledgeable, effective, child-centered play therapists. We need therapists who know how to work with kids. We need therapists that understand kids. We need therapists that are grounded in a child-centered theoretical orientation, that do not deviate when things get hard, that do not deviate when you start to question what's happening. There is a world out there desperately wanting people who can do this job and do it well and give families and kids hope and healing and change. And you all are a part of that. And I started this because I realized there were a lot of therapists listening to my parenting podcast. So I really had no idea where this was going to go. I had no idea the impact it was going to have. I had no idea how quickly it was going to grow, the international listenership that I have in this community. For those of you who have emailed me and told me the impact that this has had on your work, on your career path, you were flailing around, not really knowing what to do. You got thrown into working with kids. You kind of had an idea of play therapy. I mean, I've gotten stories from every background, every gamut, every scenario. And the consistent message that you all are saying is that this podcast and the information and the child-centered model and this theory has changed you. And therefore, the better part of that is when we are changed and when we see the value in doing this, doing it well, and being at the top of our profession, then therefore kids and families are forever changed. So I'm actually a little bit emotional. I really cannot tell you how grateful I am to be a part of this. I love what I do. I love child-centered play therapy. I love that we are a growing movement internationally. All of you reaching out from other countries all over the world, I know so many of you tell me that play therapy, especially child-centered, is in its infancy where you live. Be the people that champion this. Be the people that evangelize this. Be the people that become so well-grounded and knowledgeable in this that you then start training people. That is my greatest hope and desire, that we fill this world with child-centered play therapists that just are able to help thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And this is a generational change, right? Because when we change the life of one child, it changes that family. And therefore, when that child grows up, their family is different. So, I mean, this is a cyclical, generational, future thinking type of movement. And I'm just really, really so grateful to have you to be a part of this. So anyway, I wanted to give you a little encouragement. I wanted to give you a little pep talk. You really cannot understand how much this means to me. And I hope that we continue to just pour into this and hone our skills and grow and change the world, because that's really what this is about. You know, we go into therapy because we want to help people. We decide to work with kids because we know how impressionable they are. And my vision is a world full of happy kids that become happy adults. And I hope that that becomes all of our mission. And I think that this is the way that we get there. We ground ourselves in the child-centered model, and we know everything that we can know about it. We continue to learn, we continue to grow, and we continue to do great things in the world. So keep your emails coming, keep your questions coming, Brenna@thekidcounselor.com. I love to hear from you, and thank you very, very much for making this such a cool thing. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.